The Sikha for Parshas Nasi is in Chelek Beis, Volume 2 of Likutei Sichas, and the Rebbe begins with a quote from the Maimer Bossi Lagani, the last Maimer that the previous Rebbe wrote, in which the Rebbe refers to the word Shittim and explains that it comes from the word Shtus, which means folly or a form of insanity, and says that there are two kinds. There is the shtus, or the folly, that is holy, and there is the shtus and the folly that is unholy. When a person goes beyond the rational, goes beyond the call of duty, that's the shtus of Kedusha, and the shtus of the unholy is any time a person sins or digresses from the path of holiness. To prove, as a proof text, that the word shtus means sinning, he brings the verse ki siste ishte, that it's referring to a woman who is accused of being immodest, of behaving immodestly, or of having committed adultery, and the Torah uses the expression siste ishte. If a woman digresses or strays from the proper path, and it's the same root word, eshtus. Now, in general, in Hasidus, everything is carefully and scrupulously considered, and all references must have a very meaningful relationship to the text or to the topic that is being discussed. So when we bring a proof text from a verse in the Torah, it's not simply to show that we're familiar with the verses, but rather that the text adds an insight and gives us a better understanding of the subject. Now, concerning this verse, ki siste ishte, by quoting or by bringing a proof from the fact that if a woman is accused of committing adultery, the Torah describes that as siste, and that's supposed to imply that any sin is an insanity or a folly, which is the folly of the unholy, is on the surface a good, a valid proof text, because it tells us that a person does not sin unless there's a feeling or a spirit of folly that takes over and confuses the person, and enabling them to overlook the truth, overlook the obvious, and to do something not permitted. But as soon as you look a little bit deeper, we find that this proof text really isn't a very useful one at all. Because what the Rebbe is trying to say is that every sin is a spirit of folly. All sins, even the minor sins, even when we fail to sanctify ourselves with what is permissible. Which means to say that even if something is kosher and allowable, if we are careful not to indulge, that too is a mitzvah, sanctifying ourselves even with what is permissible. So all of that, if a person transgresses, is considered folly. It's coming from an insanity of sorts. Now, how do we know this from the proof text that the Rebbe quotes? Committing adultery is one of the more serious sins. So if a person commits adultery, or is even accused of committing adultery, if that comes as a result of insanity, that can be explained in that no one would commit such a serious sin were they not temporarily insane. But how does that prove that all sins, even the lesser sins, are also coming from a place of insanity or a spirit of folly? So the proof text falls short of proving that which it's supposed to prove. So the Rebbe explains as follows. The connection between a person sinning out of insanity and the immodesty of the accused woman is in two things. Number one, the law about the sota, refers only to a married woman. Because it's only the married woman whose indiscretions constitute adultery. Even though there are opinions, or there's an opinion in the Gemara that says even a single person could also be committing, if a single person misbehaves, it is as serious as the married woman, but that's an opinion of only one Rabbi Elezer, but the halacha, the final verdict is that it applies only to a married woman. Now the reason for this is because the sin is such a violation, it is such a grave sin because of the sanctity of the married woman, because of the sanctity of the marriage relationship. And the same is true also with every sin. Since every sin separates the Jew from God, damages the relationship between the neshama of the Jew and God, and that's why even a small, what seems to be a small sin, is very damaging, because the Jew is the married woman in the relationship with God, as we will explain later. Now it says in the Zohar that a philosopher once asked Rabbi Elezer, since Jews are the chosen people, why is it that in many ways Jews are weaker than other nations, more delicate, more sensitive? And Rabbi Elezer answered that it's precisely because we are the chosen people, because we are in some way more delicate, that we are weaker, because we can't tolerate the unholiness in the physical, because we can't tolerate the unholiness in the spiritual. And so the world is very rough on the Jew because the Jew is so sensitive. And although all other nations believe in God as well and refer to God as the God of gods, and that for them is not considered idolatry, it's not considered a breach or an infidelity in the relationship with their Creator, but by Jews, since we are of a more sensitive stuff, therefore every sin causes a separation and damages the relationship, the special relationship that we have with God, as it is with a married woman. Also, Jews are compared to the heart. And with the heart, being that the heart is more sensitive than other limbs, even the slightest imperfection can cause terrible damage. And with this we'll understand the connection between the accused woman and all other sins, in that they are all coming from a spirit of folly. Jews are, in the relationship with God, Jews are the married woman. God is the husband and we are the wife. And this is true in all times, including the times of Golus. The difference is only that now, in the time of Golus, we refer to God as the Baal, the husband. And in the future, in the time after Mashiach, God will be referred to as Ish. And as he says in the Navi, in response to the complaint of the Jews, when the Jews complained that God abandoned us in the time of Golus, and that we are somehow no longer married, God's response is, Eze seifa Christus imachem. Where is your document of divorcement which I've sent you? There is none, because I cannot exchange you for anyone else, and therefore, being the wife at all times, being the married woman, the virtue of a married woman is that she is in touch with the desires and with the needs of her husband. And so any time a Jew loses touch with what it is God wants, even if the sin that he's committing seems to be a minor sin, it affects the quality of the relationship. And therefore, when we want to explain how with every sin we become completely severed from God, not totally severed, but truly severed, and even when we indulge in what is permissible, that also damages our relationship, we bring proof from the case of a married woman who has damaged her relationship with her husband. And it's not a proof text alone, but rather it is an insight and an explanation. Why is it that every sin damages the relationship? Because our relationship is one of marriage, it's an intimate relationship, and is easily damaged by the slightest indiscretion. That's number one. Number two, the notion, kisista ishte, applies to a woman who has not in fact committed any sin. She is merely suspected of having sinned, because she behaved in a manner that caused suspicions, raised suspicions. But it is very likely, highly likely, that in fact she is innocent and has not sinned at all. And even that the Torah describes as folly. Even that comes from a place of insanity. And because of that, because the behavior that caused the suspicion is so low on the level of the animal rather than the human, that's why the accused woman brings a sacrifice made out of the food of an animal. Animal food. So we need to understand this. Since, in fact, she has not sinned, why don't we assume that we don't accuse every person is innocent until proven otherwise? So if, in fact, we have no proof that she has sinned, why don't we simply assume that she is innocent, as are most people? And why does she have to bring the sacrifice of the animal food? So the reason is that the very fact that a person can bring suspicion to themselves, suspicion of misbehavior, for that alone you have to bring a sacrifice. But in fact, even after she brings the sacrifice, even though she needs to bring the sacrifice, it turns out in the end that her innocence is proven, her innocence is established, and that the misbehavior that brought the suspicions was only a temporary, momentary one. And in the end, she is blessed and healed by the whole process and by the whole experience. As the Gemara says, that if she had born children in pain, she would now bear them with less pain, or if she didn't have children, she would now have children, and so on. The same is also when a Jew sins. Every sin is an insanity, and in fact is not an actual violation of the relationship, a violation of the marriage between the Jew and God, because God will never divorce us, and kvedi la'achar lo etein, the essence of the Jewish soul cannot be given away, cannot be given inappropriately. It belongs only to God and is given only to God, so that the sinful behavior is only on the surface. But when we look deeper beyond the surface, we find that there really was no violation of the marriage. And that's why when speaking about the folly of unholiness, the insanity of unholiness, we bring the proof from kisista ishte, from a case where a woman is accused of misbehavior but in fact has not misbehaved. This tells us that in every sin the Jew's misbehavior is only on the surface, but beyond the surface the Jew remains loyal and innocent, and the relationship and the marriage with God remains intact. since a person who gives credence to anything other than God, that attributes reality and substance to anything that is not godly, anything outside of God, that is a denial of God's oneness. And particularly, if this finds expression in a violation of a commandment, even if it's a rabbinic commandment, and certainly if it's a more serious violation, all of that is only a spirit of folly and a temporary insanity. A person could think, as it says, "Vatei metzien azavani Hashem v'adnai shvacheni." A person can think that for this behavior, for this kind of insanity, God has in fact abandoned us and forgotten us. And in response to that suspicion, the Torah, the Rebbe brings the quote from Torah, "Ki siste ishte," if a woman is accused of misbehavior, that just as this woman who behaved immodestly and temporarily, for the moment, the suspicion of her misbehavior causes her to have to separate from her husband, but the truth is that there was no real violation of the marriage, and in a short time she will once again be reunited with her husband, and not only to go back to as good as it was before, but better than it was before, because she is healed from whatever ailed her, whatever problems that she had before the suspicion and before she goes through the whole process of the Satan. And the same is true also, every person knows within himself where he has failed and where the insanity or the folly of his thinking lies. Yet, the person should not become discouraged. Every Jew has to know that there is never a time when there is a true violation or separation between a Jewish soul and God, and there cannot, God forbid, be the loss or the permanent damage to a soul, because the divine spark in the soul can never be given away, and the loyalty of that core of the Jewish neshama is never squandered or is never misdirected away from God to anything else. And the insanity and the folly is only a temporary, momentary thing in which the person loses his bearings and behaves in a manner not fitting the Jew or not fitting a human being. But immediately after that folly is cleared away, and the innocence and the permanence of a Jew's connection to God is reestablished, as the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya, that even the lowest of the low who sins and neglects his Yiddishkeit in many ways, even in some very serious violations, yet when it comes to the very relationship with God, when it comes to the shidduch, when it comes to the marriage that exists between the Jew and God, here the loyalty and the devotion is exclusively to God, and even the lowest of the low will give up his life rather than deny that essential relationship. So the core of the neshama is not affected by this insanity. The insanity can reach only so deep, but the core of the neshama remains loyal, as the Megillah says concerning Esther when she was taken to Ahasuerus, and Esther here being an expression of the neshama as it comes down into the body and is dragged away into the concerns of the body and the needs of the body and so on. So Esther being the neshama in the body, the Megillah tells us that after Esther was taken to the palace, was taken to Ahasuerus, Esther remained loyal to Mordechai. Mordechai here refers to that part of the neshama that doesn't come into the body, the part of the neshama that stays above, beyond the effect of the body. And so the Megillah says that even after she was taken to Ahasuerus, "Es ma'amar Mordechai Esther Eisa," that Esther continued to follow the instructions of Mordechai, kasher hoisa ba'omna itay, just as it was while she was still with Mordechai. So the neshama, even after it comes down into the body and is invariably affected by the body, yet the core of the neshama, the Esther of the neshama, remains loyal to the part of the neshama that is above the body. And the part of the neshama that is above the body never gets separated from its godliness because it isn't affected by the world around it. Like Mordechai, who would not submit to the unholiness in the world. And so it is with every neshama. The core of the neshama remains loyal even when on the surface there seems to be insanity or folly and misbehavior. And through this, we are assured that as soon as the insanity clears away, we find ourselves connected to God with love and with fear, with the Shechina still experienced and revealed in the neshama. And that is when the inner part of the neshama, the pnimius of the neshama, is revealed to us, so that it removes any possibility of forgetfulness or insanity or folly. And that's what we're describing when we say the days of Mashiach, the coming of Mashiach for each individual, when each individual has complete contact, is totally in touch with his neshama, and therefore is not vulnerable to the distractions of the world. And when each person in his own life experiences the Bias HaMashiach of his neshama, then together we make the preparation and we prepare the world for the complete and total redemption, Mashiach B'Klolos.